Presently, from one side of the pictured landscape, there stepped forth a creature as strange as a madman's dream. It was sandy yellow in color, spotted with green and brown, somewhat like a big lizard in form, if one can imagine a lizard with a huge frill like an umbrella projecting from its neck. It had curiously short legs and held them in bent position as it ran, with quick, light steps toward a tuft of the grass at the center of the scene. Then rocked itself up and down on its limbs, turning its head this way and that, as though looking for danger. Apparently, it saw none. Lowering its head rapidly, it began to feed on the grass. As it did so, another animal, smaller and so swift of foot that I hardly caught a glimpse of it, dashed out and off at one side of the picture. "Fahit Nexar, Heag," said a voice and fell silent. I looked at Ashembi. "These are the names of the animals," he said. "Attend." At the right of the scene, I caught a glimpse of another animal. A glimpse and no more. But I had seen a low, ugly crocodilian head, a row of savage teeth in that instant, and I knew I was watching the hunter and the hunted. The first animal went on feeding quietly. Suddenly it paused, lifted its head, the frill at its neck spread and swelled, standing straight up. Then it leaped for safety, but it leaped too late. There was a sudden vision of a jumping figure, a brief moment of struggle, and the frill neck was groveling on the ground, its back broken, while the other bent to tear a great piece of flesh from the quivering body. "Lectoria," announced the sound device.
The little knit and all the people with their own cloaks and the loose to the strand, playing my cross, and water with the bottle. Very little maids and the floor, I should have lost silk with the one deal, maybe some bad people, but I'm not sure if it's out there tonight.
I'm not
Wriggled down into an opening barely large enough to admit his body, the top clamped and sealed overhead. He fitted his feet into their proper stirrup-like holders and fixed his hands on the controls. There was violent acceleration, and he shot away and ahead. Behind him, the jagged shape of the fortress loomed. He swung his tiny ship. He drove fiercely for the tiny rings of red glow which centered themselves in the sighting screen before him. He drove and drove while the fortress dwindled to a dot and then vanished. On either side of his ship, a 10-foot steel globe clung. He checked them over, tense with the realization realization that he must very soon be within the practical timing range of the new enemy solid missiles, he made minute adjustments in the settings of the globes. He released them together. They went swinging madly away at the end of a hair-thin wire which would sustain the tons of stress that centrifugal force gave the spheres. They spiraled toward darkness with its background of innumerable stars. The enemy would be puzzled this time. They'd develop missile weapons with computing sights. In their last attack, 500 years before, the enemy had been defeated by the self-driving globes that had an utterly incredible acceleration. It was reported from the Cathor sector that in this current attack, they had missile weapons with a muzzle velocity of hundreds of miles per second, which could actually anticipate a globe within a 160 gravity drive. They could fire a solid shot to meet it and knock it down because of some incredible computer system which was able to calculate a globe's trajectory and meet it in space. They were smart, the enemy.